Today I would like to have a look at what is meant by this phrase, which is familiar to most of us, the sides of the north, which we find in two verses of the King James Version. We find this phrase in Isaiah 14, verse 13, and Psalm 48, verse 2. In Isaiah 14, we have a reference to Satan meditating a usurpation by wanting to ascend above the stars of God and to sit upon the Mount of Congregation in the sides of the north, above the heights of the clouds, and to be like the Most High. In Psalm 48, verse 2, the sides of the north is associated with Mount Zion, the joy of the whole earth, the city of the great king. It has been suggested that the sides of the north, particularly in relation to Mount Zion, points to the actual location of the throne of God. We also note, however, that the same two Hebrew words translated the sides of the north are also found together three times in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39. Here the reference is to the place from which Gog and his hordes come. Here the two words are translated far north in a number of translations. Of course, the phrase sides of the north may have a different meaning in different contexts. It does not necessarily mean the same thing in these different contexts. A number of thoughts have been put forward as to what the sides of the north may mean. In this discourse, we will look at these thoughts in the light of scriptural evidence, present scientific knowledge, and the historical and religious context. The phrase sides of the north comes from two Hebrew words, as mentioned. The word translated north in the Hebrew is shapon, which means north, i.e. one of the four compass points, which is the left hand as one orientates oneself by facing east towards the rising sun, the customary orientation. It also means north wind. In scripture, it can also carry the thought of a dark, hidden, and mysterious place. The Hebrew word translated sides in the King James Version is yiraka, meaning flank, side, extreme parts, and recesses. Yiraka itself comes from a word which means a thigh or loin area of the leg. Hence the basic idea is the furthest border of the leg. And so metaphorically, the furthest part or border of something. In view of this basic underlying meaning of the Hebrew words, the sides of the north, would we better translate it as the furthest recesses or parts of the north? And we find the more modern translations use these and similar phrases. The direction of north had particular significance for the peoples that have inhabited the land of Canaan, including the Israelites. The land of Canaan is protected on the west by the Mediterranean Sea and on the east by the Arabian Desert. So when attacked by other nations, they generally came from the north or south. In fact, peoples of nations to the east of Canaan, such as Assyria, Babylon, Media, and Persia, were considered northerners because of this. From the time of the later monarchy, danger threatened, especially from the nations who would attack from this direction, from the north. God's judgment on Israel also came from the north. Assyria conquered the northern kingdom of Israel, and later the Neo-Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar conquered and deported the southern kingdom of Judah. In the Canaanite world, into which Israel came and was at times heavily influenced by, considered the north to be the place of meeting of their gods. As already noted, the Hebrew word translated north is shapon, transliterated as Zaphon. The Canaanite gods were believed to assemble on Mount Zaphon, the Mount of the North. This is usually identified with Jebel al-Akra in Arabic, which in classical Greek times was known as Mons Cassius, and Mount Zaphon in the Semitic Canaanite world. Mount Zaphon is located at the mouth of the Orontes River on the natural ancient border of Palestine, Syria, and Turkey, at the northernmost extremity of the Semitic Canaanite world, hence the appropriateness of the name Mount Zaphon, meaning Mount of the North. The mountain rises directly from a narrow coastal plain and rises to just above 1,700 meters. Because of its height and prominence, it served as a mariner's landmark. Thunderstorms and clouds gather on the mountain, and it has a long history as a sacred mountain. The mountain had a central role in Ugaritic Canaanite mythology, for it was the divine abode of the storm god Baal Zaphon, and is mentioned in the Ugaritic Baal cycle. Baal Zaphon means Lord of the North. It was believed that Baal Zaphon's lightning overcame the sea and death itself. It was also the abode of the goddess Anat. The Canaanite god Baal Zaphon was worshipped far and wide in the Semitic world, throughout the Levant, Mesopotamia, and even in Egypt, particularly at Memphis. Mount Zaphon also had an earlier sacred history among the Hurrians and Hittites, who also placed and worshipped their storm gods on it. Mountains had religious significance in most ancient civilizations, particularly as centers of cultic worship and the residence of their gods. During the Seleucid era, after Alexander's empire was divided amongst his four generals, Mount Zaphon was known as Mount Zeus Cassius, for Zeus, the supreme Greek deity, was worshipped here. The importance of this mountain as the dwelling and meeting place of the main gods in Canaanite mythology, as well as previous civilizations, is an important historical contextual factor in understanding God's dealings with the Israelites, particularly when they frequently strayed and walked after these foreign gods. We noted that the same two Hebrew words translated the sides of the north are also found together three times in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39 in relation to the invading hordes of Gog during Jacob's trouble. Here Zaphon and Yerika are translated far north, uttermost north, distant north, and remote north in most translations. The main historical event that forms the backdrop to Ezekiel 38 and 39 is the invasion of Palestine by Scythian tribes coming from the far north between 626 and 616 BC. In the map shown, we see that all the significant and high mountain ranges lie north of the land of Canaan, and it was beyond these mountains from north of the Black Sea that the mobile Scythians came. So we know that in this context of the invasion of Gog, Zaphon and Yerika means beyond the mountain ranges of Anatolia and the Caucasus in the north. This gives us an important clue as to how Zaphon and Yerika are used together. We will now consider some of the suggestions put forward as to the meaning of the sides of the north. The most straightforward suggestion in some ways is that the phrase sides of the north is topographical and refers to the presence of God in the tabernacle temple complex on Mount Moriah in David and Solomon's time, located on the north side of Mount Zion. Originally, Zion referred to the Jebusite citadel David captured, as mentioned in 2 Samuel 5 and 7. This was located on the southernmost tip of the ridge. The conquest of Canaan by Israel took some time, and it was not until King David captured the citadel that Canaan was fully conquered. Once the Ark of the Covenant was placed in the tabernacle on Mount Moriah, the name Zion came to include this also, as Psalm 68 verse 1 points out. We can see on the map that the Temple Mount was directly north of the city of David, and therefore located on the northeastern side of Jerusalem. There are, however, a few problems with this topographical explanation. Firstly, In Isaiah 14:13, the sides of the north is not related to Zion and Jerusalem at all. Here there is no relative subject. We are not told in relation to what is the Mount of Congregation on the north side of. In Psalm 48:2, here again there is no relative subject. Mount Zion is located on the sides of the north. Again, we are not told the north side of what. If the sides of the north was a topographical reference to the position of God's presence, represented by the Shekinah light in the tabernacle on the north side of Zion, Jerusalem, we would expect a relative noun for the position, for it to be Zion or Jerusalem, although it is possible that it is assumed. Secondly, we see that in the New King James Version, the word side or sides has been translated from Yerika only six times. Twice in our Isaiah and Psalm verses, leaving four occurrences where the relative noun is clearly present. This means that sides is normally translated from Hebrew words other than Yerika. And when Yerika is translated sides, it has a relative subject with it. This is inconsistent with the thought that sides of the north is a topographical reference. Thirdly, even though the Shekinah light above the mercy seat in the Most Holy was a representation of God's presence, it is certain that God in reality, that is, in his actual divine nature state, did not actually dwell there. We are told in Acts 7 that even though Solomon built God a house, the Most High does not dwell in temples made with hands. Moreover, since he made the heavens and the earth, he does not dwell in temples made with hands. This suggests that Mount Zion and the temple and tabernacle at best only represent the reality of God's abode in heaven in type. And yet the reference in Isaiah 14 seems to pertain to a higher reality rather than just a type. We read, "I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the Mount of Congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." Zion, in reality, is only a hill. It is not a mountain as such. It is not high enough to be enveloped by clouds, which is mentioned in our Isaiah verse. Notice the reference to ascending above the heights of the clouds. Literal Mount Zion is a mere hill, too small to be beclouded. Lastly, to restrict the Hebrew word Yerika to sides does not seem to do justice to its basic meaning of furthest parts or furthest recesses. This is reflected in only the King James Version and Latin Vulgate-based translations, as well as Young's literal translating its sides. Most modern translations use phrases such as far reaches, far, recesses, remotest parts, far away, and uttermost parts. With this basic meaning in mind, particularly with no positional subject, the suggestion that sides of the north refers to the tabernacle temple on the northern part of Jerusalem does not seem to reflect its basic meaning. Next, we will consider the thought that Mount Zion on the sides of the north refers to the residence of God beyond the North Star in the constellation Pleiades. It has been suggested that here lies a great center around which our sun and millions of others move. The North Star refers to a prominent star to which the north axis of our earth points. Because it is close to this axis, it appears to be motionless as the earth rotates and is therefore an ideal navigational aid for sailors, and its position does not change much in the night sky. The current pole star is Polaris in the constellation Ursa Minor, which we can see in this long exposure photograph. Notice that because it is close to the center of rotation, it appears motionless. However, it is important to understand that the identity of the pole star changes over time. This is because of the precession of the Earth's rotational axis, as well as proper motion of the stars. Here we can see in yellow the circular path the celestial pole traces in the heavens. We can see that at our current time, about 2000 AD, the star Polaris is close to our present north axis position. This is the reason it is the current pole or north star. Whereas 5000 years ago, at around 3000 BC, the polar north star was the star Thuban in the constellation Draco. We can see then that the northern axis of the Earth has not and will not always point to a fixed star, even over the short time scale of a few thousand years. There is no such thing as a fixed north polar star. It has also been suggested that the Pleiades, and in particular the star Alcyon, in this constellation, is a great motionless center around which our sun and millions of other stars move, and that God resides here, the proposed Mount Zion on the sides of the north. Job 38:31 has often been quoted in regards to this seemingly prominent position given to the Pleiades. The German astronomer Professor Madler has been quoted as having made this supposed discovery. In point of fact, in 1846, Madler noticed that the stars of the Pleiades had no measurable proper motion relative to one another. From this, he boldly concluded that they form a motionless center of a large stellar system with star Alcyon in the center. This was rejected by other astronomers because he got the location wrong. The center of our Milky Way galaxy is not in the Pleiades. Unfortunately, Madler made a wrong and speculative conclusion based on the observation of the common proper motion of the Pleiades, which simply indicated that they move together as a group in space, i.e. that they form a physical cluster. The Pleiades are not the center of anything. They are just another cluster of stars. Also, the notion that God would dwell in the constellation Pleiades, i.e. a material part of that which he has created, is probably akin to proposing God dwells in a building or temple. Since God created the physical universe and is its sustainer, he must be intrinsically independent of it and exist outside its limits. The last suggestion that we will consider is that the sides of the north is best understood in relation to the religious context of the land of Canaan that the Israelites came into and were heavily influenced by, particularly in relation to the pagan gods believed by the Canaanites to reside on Mount Zaphon, located at the northern extremity of the Semitic Canaanite world. Here, according to Canaanite mythology, resided Baal Zaphon, literally meaning Lord of the North. In Hebrew, the word for north is Shapon, from which the name Mount Zaphon is derived. Baal Zaphon was the supreme Canaanite deity, the god of the sea and storms. He was believed to reside on Mount Zaphon, a true mountain, and a mariner's landmark, often surrounded by clouds and attracting storms. We see in God's dealings with the nation of Israel, time and again, the importance of the lesson that there is no God but Yahweh, and that all other gods are idols. Israel as a nation strayed many times and did not heed this lesson, leading to God judging Israel and allowing it to be conquered and dispersed. We noted that the supreme Canaanite god Baal Zaphon was worshipped widely in Canaan, the Fertile Crescent, and even in Egypt. Excavations have shown that this god was worshipped particularly in Memphis, Egypt. Baal Zaphon, Lord of the North, is referred to in the scriptures in regards to an interesting incident that occurred during Israel's exodus from Egypt. We recall that after the last plague, Pharaoh finally let Israel leave Egypt. Once Israel left, Pharaoh and his forces pursued the Israelites, seeking to destroy them. God, however, was with them and led them by the desert road towards the Red Sea, by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire. We note that God led them every step of the way. God led the Israelites in their flight from Pharaoh and his forces. And yet as they approached the Red Sea, God told them to turn back. Yes, to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon, evidently a place of worship of the supreme Canaanite god of the sea and storms. This place, named in honor of Baal Zephon, was located on the east, on the coast, directly opposite where Israel was encamped. Being located on the coast is probably significant in view of Baal Zephon's main role as the god of the sea. Because God directly led the Israelites, turning back and encamping opposite Baal Zephon appears not to have been an oversight, as might seem to be the case at first. But because God, who does not err, directly led them, this turning back must have occurred for good reason. The Exodus account tells us that God turned Israel back with the intention of luring Pharaoh to this particular place. God knew that Pharaoh would say in his heart that the Israelites were lost in the land and the wilderness had closed them in, and would therefore pursue and attack them here. And God's direction to Israel to turn back to this location appears to have been significant also. Here in verse 4 of Exodus chapter 14, we are told that there is more at stake than the physical victory over the Egyptian forces. Here God makes it plain that he will show the Egyptians that he is the Lord, in the very location that Baal Zephon, the Lord of the North, the supreme deity of the Canaanites, has a center of worship. This tells us the miracle of the crossing of the Red Sea and the destruction of Pharaoh's forces was also a victory over the gods of Egypt, and in particular the supreme god of the Canaanites, Baal Zephon, under whose nose the victory was gained. We remember Baal Zephon was supposed to be the god of the sea, and yet God parted the Red Sea at will, till the Israelites crossed and again at will allowed the sea to close, and so drowning the forces of Pharaoh. The actual parting of the sea seems an apt symbol of God's slaying of the sea god Baal Zephon in the eyes of the Israelites and the Egyptians. By so doing, God showed the Israelites and the Egyptians that he is indeed Lord, and that the gods of Egypt, and in particular the adopted supreme god of the Canaanites, Baal Zephon, were empty, without power, and unable to save. But what is the relevance of this incident to the meaning of the sides of the north, particularly with respect to Mount Zion, which is in the south and not in the north, let alone in the far north? This incident is only one amongst others, such as Elijah's victory over the prophets of Baal, which show God's clear and demonstrated victory over these false gods. From the perspective of Psalm 48 verse 2, it becomes understandable, for ultimately in the kingdom, for this is a messianic verse, Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem, will be the joy of the whole earth, and it will be seen to rightfully occupy the elevated, prestigious position the sides of the north previously reserved for the pagan gods, who will be seen to be idols, empty, without power, and unable to save. As the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on top of the mountains, so shall God be seen as the one true God, displacing all false gods represented in those that resided in the far reaches of the north, the so-called residence of the gods. Isaiah 14 verse 13 and 14 also then becomes much clearer. Here Satan is seen to be aspiring to ascend into the heavenly realm, the position of honor the pagans have given to their false gods, the position reserved ultimately only for the one true God. The Mount of Congregation mentioned in verse 13 is probably an allusion to Mount Zephon, where Baal Zephon and the other gods gathered according to pagan Canaanite mythology. We might ask, however, why would God, our mighty and only true God, condescend and compare himself to those that we know in reality are no gods? The reason for doing so is to show unequivocally to man that his idolatrous creations are false, and it is on account of the tendency for man to create and worship these false gods that the one true God has at times had to show his clear superiority. This is the reason God is referred to as the God of gods, even though in reality there is no comparison. For all of these gods are no gods, empty, without power, and unable to save. In conclusion, the phrase sides of the north is probably a poor translation and should be translated furthest parts of the north or uttermost parts of the north. Its meaning and understanding in Isaiah 14 and Psalm 48 most likely relates to the significance of the far north in the Semitic Canaanite world as the residence of the gods, particularly the supreme Canaanite deity Baal Zephon, who was believed to reside on Mount Zephon. Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem, will ultimately in the kingdom be seen by all as the abode of the only true God. Finally, all peoples will praise and honor him and place him in the highest position of their hearts, which they previously reserved for the products of their vain imaginations. May the Lord add his blessing.